Hi, it's Tim here. I recorded this episode with Julia Caget of Sciences Po ages ago when I was at the CEPR Symposium in Paris in December 2025. But at that time, we had to keep it a secret.
Today on Vox Talks Economics, do teens read the news? High school kids today grow up in a world where information is everywhere. They also have devices on which they can find out what's happening anywhere 24 hours a day. But has this made them into better informed citizens or just distracted them? Julia Caget is one of a team of researchers behind a groundbreaking experiment to give French teens free access to a trusted news source. So, would they use it? And what would change if they did? Julia, young people in Europe now, they're digital natives. They are almost born with a phone in their hands. If they want access to information, they have plenty of information, don't they?
This is what is completely crazy about today's world, is that not only for the young, for anyone, there is a lot of information everywhere, even high-quality information that is available for free. But I guess we need to distinguish news production, or what is available in terms of news consumption, and the news that is actually consumed by people.
Yeah.
And what we see today is that in this world, there is plenty of news. People do consume less and less information.
Do we have evidence that young people are getting better informed or getting worse informed? What do we know about that?
We know that they spend less time getting news. This is something that is really striking, in particular if you looked at the annual report that are published by the Reuters Institute. Like every year, the Reuters, they compute data on how well people are informed, the time they spend like reading news, the source of news. And for years, you know, we had the impression that like young people, at least, they were not spending so much time like reading newspapers, watching TV or listening to radio, but at least they were spending time reading news online. And what we do see is a declining trend, not only among the young, but among all the population in the time spent online reading news. So people no longer go online on news sites to read news. And this is particularly striking among the young. So they have access to this information, but they do not use this information. One of the striking questions is to understand why. This has big consequences. In particular, we know that if people are less informed, they vote less, their vote can be captured, they participate less in the democratic life, so they can have negative consequences for democracy. So what we did in our study with Simon Briol, who is a professor of economics at the University of Montpellier, and Andrea Pratt, who is a professor of economics at Columbia University, is that we tried to study the determinants of news consumption by the young and whether there is a way to convince young people to consume more news. I guess this is particularly important, in particular because Andrea, with Charles Ancelucci, in his previous work has shown that there is this big issue of information inequality. Not everyone is informed the same way, and the young in particular are less informed than the rest of the population. So we wanted to find a way to see whether for young people there is some simple mechanism that can help improving their media literacy skills and also simply their news consumption. And for that, we set up an experiment that is a little bit unprecedented in terms of size. Mm-hmm. We have more than 9,600 high school students took part into it, people between 16 and 18. And we test two different mechanisms, whether or not people do not consume news because of a price barrier. And I think we really don't have to underestimate this price barrier. At the end of the day, when you ask people whether or not they're willing to pay for news, they say no. When you ask them how much you are willing to pay, they say 7 or 8, perhaps $10 a month, no more than that. But if you take like subscription to high quality newspapers now, it would be more like 12 euros a month. Uh-huh. So more than that. And then, you know, look at the budget of like students, like 10 euros a month is a lot of money at the end of the day. So this price barrier, it really doesn't have to be underestimated. Or whether this is also an issue that is linked to a lack of what people are going to call media education, or the fact that people don't have enough media literacy skills, and in particular the fact that they don't know what is high quality versus what is low quality information, or whether they don't really know what is information. And I guess this is what is very hard for young people today, because before you were mentioning the fact that all the kids, you know, they were born with a cell phone in their hand, but when they go to the cell phone before seeing a news site, they're going to see TikTok or Instagram. And it's not so easy for them to know what is the difference between going on TikTok or between going on Le Monde or the New York Times or the Guardian.
When the internet first showed up and news started to get delivered on that, those of us that were involved in creating the news, we thought this solved the problem. We thought that the problem was that there just wasn't enough information out there. And as soon as there was enough, everyone would naturally be extremely well informed and very politically aware. This hasn't turned out to be at all the case.
No, I think it was a big mistake. I really think that the issue is information inequality and the fact that you have people that are now much better informed than they were in the past and people that are much less informed. And the start is not so much with internet, it's with TV. There is this fantastic book by Marcus Pryor that is called Post-Broadcast Democracy. And I think it tells the entire story by looking at the story of TV. If you move back to the 60s, people were not consuming a lot of news, but all the people exactly at the same time, every day they were watching 15 minutes of news on TV. And they didn't really have choice because there were like three TV channels. News was on TV exactly at the same time on the three channels. And if you wanted to watch like soccer before and a movie after that, you were just like it was lunchtime or dinner time watching news. And what happened with the broadcast TV and then internet, it became even less, is that we entered in a world of what Pryor called a media choice environment. Then people, they started to have choice. So they could choose only to consume news. And so you have people like you and I guess, that consume way too much news, like a little bit in the morning, then during the day, then in the metro.
Yeah.
All the time we consume news and we can be like over-informed. But some people may decide just to watch sport on TV or to watch music on TV or to watch movies on TV. And this is exactly the same thing with the internet. So the issue is not so much the one of the information that is produced or offered, but the one of the information that is consumed. And the idea we had with Simon and Andrea, it also comes from previous work with Andrea Pratt and others. We did a report like years ago with Andrea, Anya Shifrin, a couple of colleagues for the Stigler Center, where we wanted to find solutions to today's media crisis. And in particular to the fact that media outlets are struggling, in particular because now there is a collapse in advertising revenues. People are no longer willing to pay for news. And we were thinking about like mechanisms, you know, to convince people to pay for news. And if people don't pay for news, to provide public money to fund information that can be considered as a public good. Then at some point, we were thinking, I don't know whether this is because Andrea and I would have kids or I don't know. But at some point, we were thinking, okay, the issue is not only about like producing high quality news in an independent way, but the issue is to convince your kids to eat green beans.
Yeah.
And you can produce very high, good quality green beans if you also put fries on the table.
They'll eat the fries.
All the time. And so what we did in this paper and in these experiments is to try to find a way to switch from the fries up to the green beans.
How we consume news and whether we trust it is inspiring national newspapers to do research around the world. In September 2025, we spoke to Ruben Durante about new research from Germany that tests how our desire for real news changes when we are exposed to AI-generated misinformation. Find out what happened next in the episode Misinformation and Trusted News. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review.
So what we did for this experiment is that we partner with Le Monde, which is the main national daily newspaper in France.
And it's the sort of newspaper of record, isn't
it? Yes, exactly. It would be the equivalent, I guess, of the Guardian in the UK, independent, neutral newspaper, more than 500 journalists, more than 1 million people that go on its website like every day. So like big partner. We set up this randomized control trial in a way that we did not recruit participants like the students themselves, but we recruited the schools. So basically we asked like all the French high schools whether or not they wanted to participate. And if they said yes, then the class from the high school. They were participating in the experiment. I think this is a very important aspect of what we did, because it means that at the end of the day, we have something that is super representative of the high school system in France.
Right.
We have like 241 high school. We have more than 350 classes. We have more than 9,500 high school students. And participants, they were not paid. They were not incentivized. They were not recruited online. They were like kids between 16 and 18. And if the schools were part of it, they needed to participate into it. So there was no selection bias, as you can have with a lot of like survey experiments or just like surveys that try to get a sense of how people are informed. Very large scale. Then we set up three different treatments and one control group, of course. Mm-hmm. One treatment was a one-year free subscription to Le Monde. The second treatment was a media education treatment. So basically, we train teachers that then deliver media education activities in class, like to try to teach students what is high quality information, what is a newspaper, what is the difference between a media outlet and a social media, this kind of stuff. And the third treatment was a combination of like media education and the free subscription. We did a survey at baseline where we like in particular survey people about their characteristics and their news consumption and media skills at baseline. We use that to randomize. Then we did the randomization and we have like all the details in the paper. I'm not going to bother you with that. But, like everything is super well balanced. We don't have differential attrition. Yeah. But when you work like 3 or 4 years, you know, on this kind of stuff, like setting up everything, you are very happy not to have issue with balancedness at the end of the day. Because it's going to turn out to be a nightmare if not. And then we did the treatment for 1 year. So 1 year of media education, 1 year of subscription to Le Monde or the two together. And then we have this headline survey, so we can look at a number of outcomes. We can look at news consumption. And what is very nice in what we have is that not only we have reported news consumption, but for those students who got access to Le Monde for free, we also have their actual news consumption.
I was going to ask you about that because, of course, they would say that they read Le Monde more than they actually do.
So that was super nice for us. So this is something that we thought like you. That, okay, they might lie a little bit because, you know, you have all these like social incentives and you want to please your teacher, this kind of stuff. But what is cool is that for all the students who got the free access to Le Monde, we can see whether or not they activate the subscription. And we can see how many times they got online, how much time they spent on Le Monde, which pages they consume, how they move from one page to the other. And at the end of the day, there are like two things that are very interesting. The first one is that the uptake of the experiment is very, very high. We have 75% of the people
who got
access to Le Monde activated their subscription. And on average, they really use the subscription they activated. And this is completely crazy compared to what we have in the literature. In general, this kind of treatment, the uptake is pretty low. If we're expecting perhaps from like 50%, it's 75%. So it really means that price matter at the end of the day. If you like relax the price barrier, people, they consume more news, first thing. And the second thing is that when we compare their reported news consumption and the behavior we observed they have online, they don't lie. They don't over-report.
Really?
Yeah. So that's reassuring because for all the other outcomes, we cannot control whether or not they lie. But we think that if they don't like lie regarding the news consumption, they might not lie either for the other outcomes.
I apologize to French school children for underestimating.
All, to all school children. To I guess all in French, they don't lie. The others, they might not lie, lie either.
Did the classes in media literacy, did they make a big difference?
No, what really did make a big difference is free access to news. So we observe a number of outcomes. The first thing is that when you give them free access to news, they consume more news. They consume more newspapers, and this is particularly driven by Le Monde. What is striking is that they do not consume less other media outlets. In particular, they were used to consume a lot of Hugo Décrypte, which is a kind of a journalist, young journalist star on YouTube, and they still consume Hugo Décrypte. So at the end of the day, when they do consume news, they keep consuming news.
Uh-huh.
The only thing that decreases is the time they spend on social media. So first thing that is pretty good, they spend more time consuming information, they inform themselves better, and they spend less time on social media. On that, we have a strong effect of the free subscription. We have a stronger effect of free subscription combined with media education. Media education per se do not have any impact. That the first set of results that we have. The second set of results that we have and that we like a lot is that we have an hard measure. We call it hard because this is not only like reported. Hard measure of their demand for news. How do we do that? We ask them in the final survey, do you want that we subscribe you to And then we provide a list of newsletter. So this was like an hard measure because if they said yes, we actually put their names and so they're going to receive the newsletter. We find an increase in the demand for subscription, basically for all the newsletters. So not only the one of Le Monde, but there was the one of Le Monde, the one of Quotidien, the one of France Info. We provided 7 or 8. So their interest in news per se also increased following the experiment, and in particular following free access to newspapers.
Now, does this change their knowledge, though? Are they becoming better informed by having access to the newspaper?
Yes, but only for those students from low socioeconomic background.
Oh.
I don't know. We got a fight between Simon, Andrea and I, like whether or not this was going to increase or decrease information inequality. And actually, this decreased information inequality by a lot. So if you look overall, over our entire population of students, we don't find any effect on either news knowledge or political knowledge. But now, if we do it depending on the socioeconomic background of the students, and in particular, you know, we took like 4 quartiles in terms of socioeconomic background. If you look like among people from the lowest quartile, you have a huge effect on news knowledge, so knowledge of current affairs, or more overall like political knowledge, like knowledge of European institutions. And you have no effect on knowledge among students from the high socioeconomic background. They do consume more newspapers, but they are not better informed. And our guess is that at the end of the day, this set of students, they were already informed about news affairs or this kind of stuff. Low socioeconomic background people, they were not informed. And now they became informed. And if you look at the size of the effect, we reduce information inequality by between 1/3 and 1/2. So there is a huge effect. What is also very nice compared to existing experiment is that at the end of the day, you know, we are not giving any incentive for people to like read the newspapers or watch TV. Not at all. We are just giving like a free subscription. So it means that in terms of policy implications, it's super easy to scale up. The cost is not so important because at the end of the day, if you take a subscription rate for students like to a high quality newspaper, it will be around 8 or 9 euros a month. So the state can decide to offer that. And the money that is spent, what is it used for? It's used to produce high quality information. You just pay subscription to high quality newspaper. So like the entire population might benefit it. So compared, you know, to all the criticism about like scalability that you can have, like in journalist research, for example, that say, yeah, but the main issue you have with RCT is about the voltage effect. At the end of the day, you just use kind of like research steroids to obtain a positive effect. This is not what we do here. No. We just like spend public money to subsidize, in a sense, the production of high quality information. And this is enough both like to reduce information inequality, like in terms of who is going to consume news, but then also to reduce knowledge inequality. And this is a super useful mechanism to improve how well-informed are young people from low socioeconomic background.
Are they doing better at school?
That I will tell it to you in a couple of months, I hope. No, so we are going to have this result because we are partnering with the DEP, with part of the Ministry of Education, who have all the data, in particular on the grade of the kids, and on also their like training choice, so whether they're going to specialize in math or social sciences or whatever. And this is still the part of the data that we need to exploit. So next time.
Okay. This is very encouraging, isn't it? You must be really pleased.
Oh, yes. No, we were super happy about that, in particular also because there is one negative effect that we expected to find, that we do not find. We have a no effect on well-being or news anxiety. Huh. So we're a little bit afraid that, you know, like, look at what is happening in the news. Everything is kind of pretty bad. Mm-hmm. And so we're a little bit afraid that given that they were going to spend more time reading news, they would be doing worse from a like mental point of view. And at the end of the day, we have no effect on that. I guess this might be due to the fact that they also spend less time on social media. And if you look at what is happening on social media, it's not always like better than what is happening in real life. So I don't know. But at least we don't have this negative effect in terms of well-being.
Julia, this really does confound what a lot of people assume about young people and the future of information and news. I'm looking forward to catching up with the rest of it.
Yeah, I would be happy to do so. Thanks.
You can read about the research in a CPR discussion paper called Making Teenagers Read Newspapers, a Nationwide Experiment in French High Schools. It is discussion paper 21706, and the authors, Simon Briol, Julia Caget, and Andrea Pratt.
Vox Talks Economics is a Talk Normal production. The assistant producer is Megan Bieber, and our editor is Andrei Zagarian. Next week on Vox Talks Economics, we return to our series from the Paris School of Economics with episodes on economic sovereignty and industrial policy.